Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:02 p.m. and that is on Thursday, July 8th. And I thought we'd kick off today and look at the VIX index, because there's been a well-defined pattern of activity in the VIX over the course of the last year. And every time we've seen a spike in volatility, it hasn't really lasted more than a day, and or at least not more than a day or two. And we can just go back and think about the longest one we had was in October. It jumped on the upside for 3 days in a row, and then over the course of the next week unwound it, and then some more. Same thing in January, and again in March, and again in May, and even in June. So the big question, I think, is that everyone is going to be asking is whether this jump in volatility that we saw today is going to be sustained tomorrow. And I think it's also relevant to look at this as a repeat of what happened in 2011 and in 2008. If we go back and think about what happened during those particular bouts of outsized volatility, well, we had the spike on the upside because of a very panicky environment, and then it takes time for that volatility to come back down and you get a well-defined downward trend. And you can also think about the fact that we're now right around the region where volatility started bottoming out back in 2010. So it's not quite as long on from the peak in volatility as it was back in 2008, but of course we've had a much larger monetary response on this occasion than we had then. And after 2008, there were a lot of worries that the second shoe was going to drop, that growth couldn't possibly recover, that we were going to be in a prolonged downward debt cycle, or that the debt would eventually overwhelm the economy, and that we were going to have issues with people that were not going to be able to afford houses any longer. And then, of course, there was the foreclosure crisis. And then in 2011 and 12, we had the sovereign wealth crisis, really raising people's awareness of debt issues in Europe. And yet we still had a strong recovery. Now we can think about what happens next with volatility. Well, in order to really signal that we have a corrective phase similar to what we had in 2010 and 2011, then it would at least need to break the sequence of lower rally highs. And we're a ways from that right now. And then we can also think about the fact that the ECB in here today, they announced that they're going to be more tolerant of inflation, and that they're also going to look at changing how they measure inflation. And I thought it was particularly interesting because the euro was in positive territory today. So the market was expecting at least as much as they reported, and or that they made the announcement of, and in fact they were a bit disappointed. So the euro was a little bit firmer, finding support in the region of the lows from back in March and April. But what the ECB in fact announced was that they're going to tolerate higher inflation, they're going to incorporate housing prices into their measure of inflation, and they're also going to incorporate the carbon price. So one thing that central banks have been targeted for, and a lot of people have been complaining about for as long as I've been in the markets, is that they don't look at volatile instruments. So they don't look at commodity prices because they're too volatile. And they don't look at raw property prices, but instead look at an imputed rent price. So that's certainly true of the Federal Reserve. But the reality is when we look at the prevailing culture of central banks over the course of the last 40 years, they have been primarily focused on trying to downplay inflation. So, how do you affect sentiment? Well, the first thing would be to change the way it's reported. So, then if you continue to tailor policy to how it's reported and how it's the inflationary measures are reported, then you can clearly affect how the market perceives inflation, because it's not like we haven't had inflationary pressures over the last 40 years. The cost of living has certainly risen, and it has risen faster than wages. So that has obviously had an effect on consumers, and yet inflationary pressures have been trending lower. So, how do you then, if you're worried primarily about deflation, which would appear to be the massive change in culture that we've had from central banks over the course of the last year, and particularly in response to the pandemic, because they have been trying to get inflation up and were failing. And then, with the aftermath of the pandemic, they absolutely need inflation to help them to erode the purchasing power of currencies and in order to deal with the massive debt load. So now they're starting to reincorporate volatile instruments into the measures for inflation. Well, carbon prices in Europe have been trending higher. Now they pulled back sharply over the last couple of days, and that was obviously in response to some pause in consolidation in the oil price, but they're also steadying in here, and the oil price is also steadying above the $70 area. So at least there is some evidence that we're not going to have a downward trend in on consecutive days. But nonetheless, we're at least due some consolidation and quite potentially a reversion back down towards the mean. Then, when we think about the wider environment for commodities, well, natural gas prices have been resurgent and are also consolidating above their underlying range as well. So, this is an additional example here. Well, if Europe is incorporating the commodity prices into their inflationary measure and doing it via the back door, via carbon pricing, well, then that will contribute to occasional additional inflation. And then, of course, if they incorporate housing prices rather than an imputed value from rents, that will also increase inflation. So then you can incorporate, or at least assume, that there will be some form of inflationary bias in reporting of inflation. And that does then have a knock-on effect for how markets will interpret it, because markets, regardless of what the measure is, will view the reporting of inflation as indicative of what central banks will do in terms of money supply. So that's certainly something that we need to be aware of. But for the moment, the market is still very much focused on the pandemic and the rise of the Delta variant, and worried about the transmission mechanism and how many people will be infected and what kind of impact that will have on consumer sentiment. When we think about stock markets generally, they were all pretty much in negative territory in here today, but Wall Street closed well off its lows. So the Dow Jones has been ranging for about the last 6 weeks, and I think it is likely it will follow the Nasdaq higher. And the Nasdaq pulled back reasonably sharply in here today and then rebounded as well. Well, when we then think about what we might anticipate from Europe tomorrow, well, the FTSE 100 was in negative territory today. The European stock market was also in negative territory and down well in excess of 1%. Most indices were down in the region of 2%, but they've been pulling back now for the last 3 weeks. It's in the region of the sequence of higher reaction lows, and I think it is likely we're going to have a rebound in here tomorrow, which is why I initiated an additional long position in the Dow. Then I think it's also particularly relevant that when we think about treasury yields, there were very few people were willing to give credence to the view that we were going to have a rally back in March. And I did not hold on to my long position. I was shaken out by the move in April. But we've now had that reversion to the mean. And the big question now is not so much how much further they're going to rally, but rather there's a lot of money pouring into bond funds now. But the price has been rallying for most of the last 3, even 4 months. We have a short-term overbought condition, and I think it is looking increasingly likely that now we're going to see some weakness coming through in the bond price. Well, one thing that is relevant in that case is there's been a high correlation between gold and bonds. And even though bonds have been rallying, gold has been rather weak over the course of the last 4 months. We had an initial rally in line with bonds, but subsequently gold pulled back sharply and finishing unchanged in here today. It's now right in the region of the simple moving average, and this is a logical area where people might begin to ask questions, because if bond prices start to come back down, well, then that is also going to have an impact on gold if the correlation that's been in evidence for the last 9 months or 10 months since the peak in August holds. And we may get some additional messing around here. I continue to think, though, that the likelihood is that this is just a consolidation within a much broader bull market environment, and we have to at least give some consideration to the fact that gold is quite capable of going sideways for 18 months at a time. So we've had a significant drawdown over the course of at least 8 months, and then a rebound over the last two. If this is a higher reaction low, then it would then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, and then the next break will be clearly above the $2,000 level. I think that that is likely. I believe that central banks are not really serious about curtailing the quantity of money that they're printing. There is no country wants a strong currency. And at present, the Chinese seem to be doing more than most to devalue their currency. So the renminbi remains weak. And of course, that is also amid the increasing level of uncertainty about just how friendly is the Communist administration to the financial markets, because there was a lot of hot money moved into China during the pandemic to capture the yield. And certainly the 10-year government bond yield offers a pickup in yield over what you can get in Europe and in the USA. And yields are still compressing. They're down now to about 3%. And obviously, that's a significant premium over treasuries. But if the currency continues to deteriorate and the uncertainty about the intentions of the government there, well, then that's obviously then going to have an impact on the attractiveness of Chinese assets. But as long as the yield's contracting, well, then that's beneficial to investors who've been buying. Then we can think about, well, what is likely? Well, no country wants a strong currency, and that means that we're likely to have synchronized global monetary tapering and potentially fiscal consolidation at some point in the future, but probably not in a hurry, because the last thing anyone wants to do is to endanger the recovery. So then we can think about the copper price. and it continues to consolidate. It was in negative territory today following the pop on the upside yesterday. What I thought was interesting was Stellantis, which is the merger between Fiat Chrysler and Peugeot, has announced that they're going to spend 30 odd billion on developing battery technology and building out the infrastructure. The share was in negative territory, and realistically, the share should be in negative territory because they're talking about a spending plan that is approximately two-thirds or 60% of their market cap. So they are going off to borrow a ton of money if they're going to go off and build those factories. So it's good news for there's been good news for the UK because the Vauxhall plant will be saved and they'll start developing battery-driven cars as well. So just about all of the major manufacturers now have significant plans for additional battery development, and there simply isn't enough of the stuff around. So there's going to have to be a significant mining boom in order to build out the infrastructure required to supply the global automotive sector. Then, when we think about copper, it's also involved in renewable energy. I saw a Twitter account today where there are diesel generators being used to recharge electric vehicles. So that is completely at odds with what the entire rationale for supporting electric vehicles is. They're supposed to be fueled by renewable energy sources in order to really achieve their environmental goals. But we're just not quite there yet. And the reality is that there's going to have to be a lot of mining, and that we could, in fact, see emissions rise as a result of that. So there are logical inconsistencies in terms of this drive towards zero emissions, and it can be viewed as a long-term objective, but it certainly can't be achieved in the short term if we're going to, in fact, supply the commodities necessary to achieve the utopian goals of the environmental lobby. But this, regardless, still has the potential to be a significant bull market, and most particularly for the mining sector. But we're still in this environment where interest rates have been compressing, and that does favor growth in the short term, but only insofar as bond yields continue to pull back. When we think about this range that's been forming for the FTSE 350 mining index, well, it's above the base formation that was put in between 2017 and 19, and we're not all that far away from the peaks that were put in back in 2007 through 2010. And it looks increasingly likely that we are in the foothills of a new commodity bull market, but it's going to be led by industrial resources on this occasion rather than the oil price. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.